This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by Northwest Safe. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So it's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
So Michelle Malkin and about 100 folks from across Western Washington met outside of the federal detention facility in Tacoma over the weekend on Saturday for a rally that was about standing for ICE, standing with ICE agents, the men and women who work their tails off to help enforce immigration law because we have a border that is not properly secured. It was a peaceful event. For the most part, I actually thought it had a lot of substance. I was there. I met a lot of listeners, actually. I was there covering the event for KTTH. I spoke with Michelle Malkin. We're going to talk with her at 5:30 this afternoon. But it turns out that regardless of the substance, it doesn't really matter. Regardless of the patriotism behind it, it doesn't really matter. Frankly, regardless of the support of immigrants who are not in this country illegally, it doesn't matter. Because if you're a local activist by the name of Maru Mora Villapando, everyone who showed up there, bigots. Everyone who stands in favor of supporting ICE agents from doxing, from violence, turns out you're all bigots. She spoke with Como TV.
For us, anybody that comes in favor of ICE is really against immigrants.
So that is a dangerous and absurd position. That is a dangerous and absurd position. And it's a position that's coming from a place of not ignorance. She's not ignorant on this. There's a nefarious intent here. She's someone who apparently supports open borders. She wants you to not speak out against criminal illegal immigrants. And she's so desperate for that position because she wants to bully you. Because there's no one out there who's listening to me right now. There's no one out there who was at that event on Saturday who says, I hate immigrants. No, they don't even hate people who are in this country illegally. They're simply saying, number one, we shouldn't be doxing and threatening ICE agents. That seems like a reasonable position to take. And number two, all of us are in favor of actually enforcing the law. Now, that changes a little bit. There are some folks who I suppose want to deport anyone who's in this country legally. I do not hold that position. I'm of the position that if you came to this country illegally and you did it with non-nefarious intent, you've been living here your entire life or the majority of your life, and it's the only culture, the only community you know, the only language you speak, I have zero interest in deporting someone like that. However, if you've decided that you're going to rape a woman in a wheelchair, like an illegal immigrant did in White Center, if you're going to shoot and kill a sheriff's deputy, like what happened in the east side of the state just a few months ago, and you're in this country legally, those are the folks who should be deported. I don't think that that is an unreasonable position. And I don't want to conflate, say, a DACA resident, a DACA recipient, someone who was brought here as a child. I'm not going to conflate them, as Villapando wants to, with someone who is here breaking the law, committing acts of violence against others, because I find that not only outside the mainstream, but I find that actually racist. But she's doing that because she wants to bully you into not taking a position or becoming an activist on this particular issue. She's saying that because she wants you to think that by calling out illegal immigrants who are committing serious crimes, you're actually going after all immigrants. No one is going after all immigrants except a very, very, very small percentage of a racist movement in this country. In fact, she's the one who's holding the crazy positions. We're not. She is.
Things that we would talk about is how do we shut down in WDC and how do we abolish ICE?
How do we abolish ICE? They want no enforcement of the law and they want you to believe that their position is mainstream. Dare I say, even in the Seattle area, we've got a lot of these crazy people. I don't even think that is an honest position. I don't even think that that is a mainstream position. And that's saying something. This is meant to silence you, so don't let it. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
The Joe Biden campaign sent a letter to news organizations out there, all the major ones, telling them to stop interviewing Rudy Giuliani. This is what an actual war on the media looks like. That's what this is. This is a war on the media. This has the intent of censoring the media, censoring journalists. But instead of hearing people upset that this happened, what you've seen, if you've been following this story over the course of the last day or so, you've seen a lot of blue check marks, progressive activists saying, well, I mean, they kind of got a point. Imagine for a moment if Donald Trump did this. Imagine just for a second the outcry, the lead stories, coming from MSNBC, CNN, the New York Times about how, look, we are just one step away from throwing journalists in prison if they dare put on someone on the airwaves that Trump doesn't want. Yet Paul Krugman basically say, oh, we're going to see reporters in jail now. Keep in mind, by the way, reporters were under assault under the Obama administration, where actual spying took place. But when it comes to Joe Biden, yet again, kind of getting a pass. Now, according to the Daily Beast, which broke this story, they say in a letter addressed to the heads of the major news and cable networks, as well as top news anchors, two top Biden campaign advisors make the case that by peddling routine falsehoods about the work of Biden and his son Hunter in Ukraine, Giuliani's presence on the airwaves is editorially untenable. Oh, okay. According to this letter, they said, we're writing today with grave concern that you continue to book Rudy Giuliani on your air to spread false, debunked conspiracy theories on behalf of Donald Trump. While you often fact-check his statements in real time during your discussions, this is no longer enough. By giving him your airtime, you're allowing him to introduce increasingly unhinged, unfounded, and desperate lies into the national conversation. Now, this letter was written by two of their top aides for the Biden campaign, Anita Dunn and Kate Bedingfield. In fact, Kate Bedingfield, the deputy campaign manager and communication director for the campaign, she was on this morning on CNN. CNN, of all places, just kind of putting it out there like, are you sure that you should have done the whole Hunter Biden thing the way that it was done? Are you concerned at all? Any second thoughts, any regrets coming from the former vice president as to his son's role in all of this?
No, because he didn't do anything wrong. And, you know, the White House said in 2014 that there was no issue with Hunter having that job. But, you know, and I think that asking this question is exactly, Allison, what Donald Trump wants, right? There's no evidence, as you stipulated at the top, which is important. There's no evidence that he did anything wrong.
Just real quick, because I love arguments like this. There was also a whole bunch of no evidence with anything having to do with Trump. And yet you called for an investigation. Why do you call for an investigation? Because you want to see if there's evidence into these claims, right? She seems very defensive for someone who's like, oh, there's nothing to see here. Stop looking. That's usually a red flag.
And yet he still hopes that you guys will ask questions like that, that you will try to insinuate that there was an optical issue, that there was some kind of...
There's 100% an optical issue. There's 100% an optical issue. Hunter Biden worked for a corrupt Ukrainian government company, right? This oil company, this gas company. At the same time, his father was the point person for the Obama administration into potential corruption in Ukraine. Hunter Biden was making something like $50,000 a month to work on a board of a company which he has no expertise in. Presumably, some of that has to do with the fact that your father is the vice president. Now, does it mean that there was any wrongdoing? No, it doesn't. But there's certainly some red flags. She doesn't want you talking about it at all. This campaign wants no conversation whatsoever. And part of her strategy is to go on and talk to CNN and all these other folks and kind of imply, hey, you're kind of pissing off the Biden administration, the Biden campaign. You know what happens when you piss us off? Well, all of a sudden, Joe, maybe he's not going to be willing to go and talk to you, Allison Camerota. You're just playing into what the president's campaign wants you to do. You don't want anything to do. You don't want to be a pawn from the Trump administration, do you? Because they're evil. They're bigots. You want nothing to do with them, huh?
You know, that there's some kind of issue there that wasn't there. This is exactly the playbook that he ran in 2016. We're not going to let him do it this time.
I know. You're trying not to let him do it this time because you're trying to put pressure on independent journalists, independent media outlets, to not talk to one specific person because you do not like what it is he has to say. Now, Giuliani responded via text message to the Daily Beast and said that the Biden letter, quote, sounds like the usual left-wing censorship. Everything I say is supported by such as today, affidavits and statements. They are the ones who have covered up pay-for-play for at least 5 years. Now, clearly, Giuliani is taking positions that he thinks or hopes will weaken the Biden campaign, right? I think that's a reasonable position to take. Now, some of the stuff he says is absolutely correct. Some of it is not substantiated yet by any sort of evidence. But understand what the implications are of a leading campaign, telling media outlets not to book someone who they're running against. There's no conflict of interest whatsoever. This is not a big story. Okay. I guess it's not because CNN hasn't really been talking about it at all. Neither has the MSNBC folks or the New York Times folks. But again, if the Trump team put out this letter and said, hey, guys, you have to stop talking with Kate Bedingfield, the deputy campaign manager over at the Biden campaign, because she lies a lot. Imagine that story and what it would be. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, you can follow me on Instagram. Just fire up the Instagram app. Search for the screen name Jason Rantz, J-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
The Phil Tavel campaign has been running in earnest against incumbent Lisa Herbold in West Seattle for the Seattle City Council. And earlier today, they made a big announcement. They earned a key endorsement from King County Sheriff Mitzi Jo Hanknick, who joins us right now. Sheriff, thank you so much for coming on.
Greetings. How are you?
We're doing good over here. We love to follow this kind of stuff, especially because it's an incumbent in a city that has faced a lot of criticism for how they treat law enforcement. Take us through your decision to endorse Phil Tavel.
Well, I had an opportunity to meet Phil a couple of times, and we've had some pretty lengthy discussions about what he stands for. His background, his outlook, and how he wants to go about being a city council member in the city of Seattle, and his support of law enforcement, but having a balanced approach to how, you know, for transparency and accountability, rings a bell with me, and I believe him and take him at his word.
Yeah, and there's something to be said about, you know, endorsing someone because they're not the other person, but obviously that plays a little bit of a role in it. But this was more about you like his approach or how he would approach things if he were to become elected.
Exactly. And his background. He's worked as both a prosecutor and a public defender. So he understands both sides of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just think that the other skill sets he brings to government right now, you know, he's one of the two endorsements I've made, and particularly in the district I live in.
Yeah. What was the other endorsement?
That's for Jim Pugel.
Who, former SPD chief, he's running actually in my district, South Lake Union, downtown Seattle,
yeah.
And Queen Anne running against Andrew Lewis. You know, did you have these meetings with Lisa Herbold?
I did not have any meetings with her. I've talked to her on a couple of occasions.
So they haven't reached out to you to try to seek your endorsement?
They did not, no.
Are you generally happy with her approach?
I think that the approach that Phil Tavel's going to take greatly outweighs what I think is being accomplished from my district representative.
Last question for you, just because at MyNorthwest.com, there's a story up there today about the Seattle City Council not happy with Mayor Jenny Durkin's plan to go after prolific offenders. And I know that, you know, your deputies are dealing in a lot of cases where people have repeatedly broken the law and they're repeatedly getting arrested and they find themselves back on the street. It would appear that the concern from some members of the council is that jail time might be used finally for people who are breaking their probation, and for some that goes a little bit too far. In a general sense, should jail be a part of the conversation?
Well, I think that, you know, our job is to make sure that we arrest people who are breaking the law. And, you know, that's the part that I ask our deputies to go about and do every day. And so there's a bigger piece, as you know, to the law enforcement or the law and justice process. But the thing that we can talk about and control from the sheriff's office perspective is doing good investigations and putting people forward who we think have violated the laws.
Has this gotten a little bit too political in your view? Just the whole idea of how having to deal or how to deal with prolific offenders?
Yes, it has gotten too political. And I think, you know, there's a way that if we all got together across jurisdictions to coordinate our efforts, I think we'd have a better way to move forward. That's not to say that we work really well in the sheriff's office with, you know, SPD and other law enforcement agencies in doing our work.
Well, there you go. Sheriff Mitzi Jo Hanknick, big takeaway again today is that she has endorsed Phil Tavel for Seattle City Council coming out of West Seattle. This is the district that is currently held by Lisa Herbold, the incumbent. Sheriff Jo Hanknick, as always, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason, and thank you for the support of law enforcement.
Absolutely.
It really means a lot to me.
We try to do our best to back the blue on the show and on the station. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So it wasn't necessarily a shocking win for the Seahawks, but it was a very decisive one. Producer Peyton, as always, has the two-minute drill.
Start your watches and off we go, because it's time for the two-minute drill.
Second down and five. Murray tries to snap. Oh, yeah. It's intercepted. Tiny. 20, 15, 10, 5. Hello. Mr. Clowney, touchdown, Seahawks!
The Seahawks got a win on the road in Arizona, and Jadeveon Clowney reminded us of Seahawks defense's past, with a defensive end getting a pick six touchdown, really kicking things off for the Seahawks and putting them in gear early.
Well, the handoff to Protice, he breaks three, down to the five, he's in! Touchdown, Seahawks! From 9 yards out, C.J. Procise. It looked like he was going to be trapped right at the line of scrimmage, and suddenly he pops out.
The Seahawks running back core bounced back in great ways, with Chris Carson being able to get 100 yards rushing this week, and C.J. Procise added to the stat sheet for his second career touchdown ever. It's been a tough path for C.J. Procise on his way back into the Seahawks rotation, but he is looking like he is in prime shape for the Seahawks this season. Uncle Will Disley cashed in on his fourth touchdown of the season, making that connection between him and Russell Wilson even better than what we could have imagined going into the season this year. Kyler Murray proved that he could be a problem in the future for the Seahawks and for everyone in the NFL for that matter.
Really natural as an athlete and thrower. His timing, his awareness, his processing is just really fast. He should be a fantastic player.
And the legend Larry Fitzgerald moved to second all-time yesterday in receptions, passing Tony Gonzalez. The Hawks are on a short week, playing Thursday this week against the LA Rams at home, and who knows what the LA Rams are going to bring to Seattle. The defense just gave up 55 points yesterday, but on the offensive side of the ball, Jared Goff still threw for 500 yards and lost, so who knows what Sean McVay and his side are going to bring to the Pacific Northwest later this week. Stop the watches, that's it. 2 minutes is up. I'm producer Peyton for the Jason Rancho Show.
I mean, to be fair, it was 2 minutes and 1 second, so why don't you tighten up a little bit?
Ooh.
Because on this show, clocks matter.
Sorry.
So, you know, tighten up. So, a couple things. Number one, tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., and then again tomorrow afternoon at 5 p.m., you're going to get an opportunity to win a pair of tickets to this crucial matchup at home at CenturyLink on Thursday. It's kind of cool going to a Thursday night football game in the Seattle area. So we're going to give you an opportunity to win those tickets again tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. We're going to give you a code during the Saul Spady show. And then you've got up until my show at 5 p.m. for your second code. Can potentially get two opportunities to win these tickets to go to the game. We give them usually as part of the deal for producer Peyton to get him to sign on to this job. I said I would promise him these tickets. And technically, they are his tickets that we're just now giving away.
Yay.
So you could win producer Peyton's tickets to this Thursday's game. He doesn't need to go.
Yeah,
okay.
Please go enjoy the tickets that I would really, really enjoy. Go enjoy them for me.
He will feel bad if you don't actually enjoy it, so we're going to do that. Number two, I thought this was kind of interesting. Generally speaking, a good sports weekend for at least Western Washington, right? You've got the Mariners won last night.
Yes.
You've got Sounders won.
Yes.
You've got Huskies winning.
Correct.
Got Seahawks, obviously.
Correct.
And then you go, how'd they do?
Yeah. People don't talk about that one.
It is kind of interesting where everyone's super proud about the Cougs and everyone's talking about Coach Mike Leach. They don't seem to win all that often, it feels like.
Not this year.
Right?
I mean, the last few years, I mean, they've won more than ever, but...
But I mean, that seems to be the outlier.
Yeah, no.
This year, they're not doing so...
They're not great this year.
And then the first time in a long time, I actually watched the Husky game. And I only did it because I was trying to impress someone I'm looking to date. And that's the only real reason I did it. And I liked it more than I thought. I didn't think I was going to enjoy it.
College football games are great.
Yeah, they are. They're also tiny.
I hated it because I'm a USC fan. So,
well, you're a bad person. Also.
I am. I'm a terrible person. But I was there. It was freezing cold. And UW got the win.
Yeah, UW got the win. Other big game, of course, yesterday was the Seattle Sounders. And I have to say that this is probably the best way to enjoy this sport was watching a game like that. Because it was end-to-end. Okay, come on. This was like a mainstream game that non-soccer fans would have probably liked.
You get probably, but they didn't watch.
Two red cards.
Yeah.
One was a bad red card, but there were two red cards. It was end-to-end the entire time. Defensively, it strategically, they looked, both sides were just crazy because no one
was
really...
You're talking a lot about this right now.
But that's Jordan Morris, hometown kid.
He scored.
In stoppage
that's what he's
time,
supposed to do.
But in stoppage time,
nobody
was a
should be surprised
dink.
By that game.
Oh, my God.
No news here.
I thought you were a Sounders fan.
I am.
You're not. You don't sound like him.
I am thrilled about a win, but that's what we should do in San Jose. We can talk.
Okay.
Let's talk Sounders when we beat Portland. How about that?
They're not playing Portland again, except maybe in the postseason.
Oh, darn.
Maybe. You used to work for the Sounders, yeah?
Yeah.
Think you're ever going to get a job there again after this?
Probably not.
Probably not. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation. Back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. The city of Puyallup has spent more on lawsuits around homelessness in the past 5 years than it actually has on nonprofits to serve the homeless community. That according to the Tacoma News Tribune. And at the time, the city says they want to collaborate more with an organization called New Hope, which happens to be the same organization the city spent so much money over in legal battles. Kind of doesn't make any sense to people like me. It's a topic that in a lot of ways I think has defined Puyallup races, the topic of homelessness. Joining me on the line is a candidate for Puyallup City Council, Paul Herrera. Paul, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So when you see these numbers, when you see these details about how much the city is spending on legal services versus how much they're using to help the community who are living in squalor, living out in parks, what's your reaction to that, your take?
Well, homelessness is affecting everybody, and seems like Puyallup, the perception is that we don't know what we're doing, talking to people at the doors, that's one of the number one issues for people. When I'm out door knocking, is the homeless issues, and compiled with just the lawsuits and just what people are seeing around their community, they're not very happy.
So what do you think the city is doing wrong right now? What would you do if you were in power to help address this issue?
Well, homelessness, people like to lump it in one big thing together. I like to slice it up for what it is. You have Puyallup has always taken care of its temporary homeless with, Helping Hands and St. Francis House. And we want to continue that part. And Puyallup has a big heart, and they've always done that. But it's that element that doesn't want to, go and to the criminal element of it. But that's the one that we need to look at. And we need to look like what you were saying yesterday about root causes. I'm always looking at root causes. I was an undercover narcotics detective, so I know all about the trends, habits, and idiosyncrasies of that stuff. And I want to look hard at the root causes of this.
So the argument on how much has been spent fighting in legal battles over this is a little over $1 million. The argument is essentially, we have to do this because this is how we can, in the long term, get all of our ducks in a row and make sure we're doing things the right way. We've tried to pass policies that have been challenged in court, policies that presumably, there's a good faith belief that they could work. So do you think that the city is spending too much money in court?
Of course, yes. Way too much money in court. $1 million is a lot for this city. The city of Puyallup is not that big. People think it's a huge city. It's only 41,000 people. And that's a big deal. People pay taxes here, and they don't want to go to that type of stuff.
So where would you put the money? If waving the magic wand, again, what ended up being spent was about $872,000. If you can have that money plus the $1 million, how would you prioritize, understanding, to your point, that this is more of a complex issue?
Well, there's all kinds of places where you can put money, and lawsuits is the last place you want to put it. Cities have all kinds of stuff that needs to come up, and the more money you're putting in lawsuits, the less the city can get for services and other things that are needed and that are required. So, we'll take a look at all those things.
Do you have faith in the New Hope Resource Center, which has been at the sort of the top of the controversy list in the neighborhood there, say that, hey, we're getting a whole bunch of garbage and drug use and crime that they believe is connected to New Hope. And there seems to be a general sort of belief by the city that there's at least some red flags.
Yeah, so, you know, New Hope, you know, I'm a police officer, and I work in the Tacoma area, and I've seen the unintended consequences of people trying to help. They had the Tacoma Indian Center up on Market Street in downtown Tacoma, and they moved it to the east side of Tacoma, right in smack into the middle of the neighborhood, to be so the people that go to that place can be closer to the hospital that's over there. Well, instantly, you know, 50 plus people moved into that area, and everybody's upset about that. So, you know, New Hope is right in the middle of where everybody can see, and you know, it's affecting businesses in the area. It's affecting people in there, and I think it's the unintended consequences of people trying to help.
Just joining me, we're talking with Paul Herrera. He is running for Puyallup City Council. We're talking about homelessness and a Tacoma News Tribune story that indicated that the city of Puyallup has spent considerably more money in legal challenges and legal fights than they have in actually donating to homeless resources. You know, one of the fights, Paul, has to do with the fact that they had this ordinance that said, hey, you've got only certain zones in which you can come up with these, you can actually construct these homeless centers. Did you support that original ordinance?
The ordinance for how far they could be from...
Yeah, it had to be... yes, exactly.
Well, I think they were talking about how many distances, and I think they finally voted on a 500-foot buffer. You know, I think it should be farther out. You know, so it doesn't need to be right in the middle of everything, you know, just for safety reasons.
What kind of safety reasons?
Well, I mean, just, you know, as a law enforcement officer, you know, people see, you know, what's going on out there, and, you know, our parks are right there in the middle. It's kind of a center of the heartbeat of the city, and, you know, we have other areas in the city that would probably best serve you know, the homeless people in the area.
Now, some people obviously will take that as and accuse you of trying to push everybody out of sight, out of mind, and this would actually hurt folks. But that's not what you're actually doing, right?
No, no. So, you know, I look at it like this. You know, I'm a veteran, and I use the VA. And the VA is in Lakewood, and another one's in Seattle. And I have to go where the services are. You know, I'm not expecting Puyallup to put a VA hospital in downtown Puyallup, because I live here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I look at it.
When you look at what's going on in Puyallup and you take a look at how homelessness is impacting, you know, Seattle, Olympia, Everett, is there this fear of the creep coming from some of these other cities around you, particularly Seattle, where it seems like this problem is just getting completely out of control?
Sure, there's creep everywhere. What happens sometimes in the area, at least in the Tacoma area, they have, you know, big city homeless shelters and things like that, and they do have rules. And, you know, the bad people who are, you know, doing bad in those shelters, they can get kicked out of those areas. So they'll migrate to, let's say, Puyallup. You know, I see the same faces that I deal with every day in Tacoma area sometimes show up here in Puyallup. So it's a regional thing, and they do move around.
Generally speaking, do you think cops are given enough authority to help in this regard?
Well, you know, people think cops, you know, we see the human side of things.
Yeah.
We know, you know, we see the human side of things. We're not robots, you know. We talk to the homeless. We know their plight. We know the different layers of homelessness. You know, and it comes down to, you know, the drug addiction and mental illness, which are one and the same. And, you know, people forget about the human side of things. And, you know, homelessness has always been around, and we just got to keep fighting at it. You know, some people think the war on drugs was a failure. But, you know, and we can't say that about homelessness. It's just like we can give up on everything. Like you could say that, why wash my face? It's just going to get dirty again. I say you got to keep washing it. You got to keep at it. And Yeah.
Yeah, and surely there can be some sort of compromise between a full-out war on drugs and basically legalizing everything and enabling folks who are living out on the streets, clearly sure. dealing with addiction, and yet we pretend, oh, no, these are people who are just living out on the streets because rent got too high. We know that that's just not yeah. true.
No, not at all. It's root causes. It's drugs, and everybody knows this. This yeah. opiate epidemic, we all knew it was coming. In the early 2000s, we had a meth epidemic coming, you know, meth labs and everything. Mm-hmm. And that time, at least in the Pierce County area, you know, they did something about it. They passed policies to make the ingredients to make meth labs really hard to get, like Sudafed had to go behind the thing and stuff like that. Any trace amount of possession of methamphetamine, you can catch a felony charge. Seems like we're going the opposite way with this opiate epidemic.
Yeah, and as we go the opposite way, surprise, surprise, the problem actually gets worse. We've been talking with Paul Herrera. Yeah. He is running for Puyallup City Council. Paul, thank you so much for spending some time with us. We wish you the best of luck in your campaign. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you very much.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Hope everyone had a wonderful weekend. A guy pretending to be a journalist asked a guy who pretends to be a mobster his thoughts on topics that neither of them actually understand. It was amazing to see Brian Stelter interview Robert De Niro on CNN. Now, a lot of people are focusing on the fact that De Niro dropped an F-bomb or two, which is kind of weird to be surprised by because that's what he does. And he kind of, that's his brand. There's nothing wrong with it, even if it's on CNN. But what I think is interesting is that it kind of ignored everything that led up to dropping the F-bomb. They, of course, were talking about Donald Trump, and Robert De Niro is insane when talking about Donald Trump. He just loses it. And I thought that this interview went as badly as you would expect an interview with Robert De Niro to go when talking about politics. Now, I'm not one of those people generally who says, they're a celebrity, stick to your thing. But, I mean, I don't think we should pretend that Robert De Niro's opinion on this is any more important than any random person that you just find on the street and ask them their say. Robert De Niro has no insight into Donald Trump. He doesn't study this. So he is, in a way, the same as just going across, just asking random strangers and doing one of the man on the street pieces of audio that we play on the show all the time because it's so bad.
What is going on? This guy is crazy. We've got to get him out.
When you say crazy, do you mean in a medical sense? Because that gets criticized pretty quickly.
Possibly medically, too.
Is he a Dr. De Niro? It's Dr. De Niro over here. He didn't even play a doctor and analyze that. He was the one who was crazy and being analyzed, and yet we're supposed to go to him and say, oh, well, he should tell it to give us a thorough reading of your medical take on Donald Trump.
Yeah, you must respect what De Niro says.
It's just so weird. And Brian Stelter responds by saying, you know, people are going to immediately criticize you for that, but then doesn't actually criticize. In fact, he enables Robert De Niro to speak more about things he has no clue what he's talking about.
I'm starting to think. I didn't think that before, but now
he didn't think it before.
I actually, when I saw him out in front of the helicopter waiting to go somewhere and talking endlessly and sweating and not even, I said, this guy, he's not even aware of what he should at least ask somebody for a handkerchief or something and dry himself off.
So in one instance in which the president was sweating, presumably because it might be hot outside or wherever it was, that's indicative of a mental illness?
Dude, I am screwed. I sweat constantly.
You are, like, weirdly sweaty all the time.
All
I was going to talk to you about that.
It's just something very strange about that.
I wonder, as an actor, do you ever look at the president and think he's performing, like he's playing or an act or something?
I love the phony earnestness in Brian Stelter's voice. And by the way, the Chiron on screen says, rare interview with Robert De Niro. It's not that rare. It's rare, I suppose, on CNN. I guess I'll give him that. And it's rare because no one cares what Robert De Niro has to say about anything politically.
In ways, I think he is, but I think that it's, as I think some of these other pundits on Fox are too, because I can't believe that they would actually buy into this craziness. Mm. This guy is should not be president, period.
Okay, see, that's a separate issue than whether or not you think someone is mentally ill or should not be taking positions he takes. The fact of the matter is, he ran for president and he won. I know you're still upset with that. I know. There's still people who are upset with George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan. We now have three presidents that progressives always point to so they don't have to take any responsibility whatsoever for the problems in their own neighborhoods, in their own districts. You have failing schools, and instead of saying, oh, let's look at what's going on locally, they turn to Trump. You've got issues going on with mental health and resources, or lack thereof. And instead of saying, hey, what can be done about this? You're blaming Ronald Reagan. This is absurd.
And when you say that, folks on Fox come after you. I remember the Tonys when he got up there and cursed. A lot of criticism of you. Okay, well, you know, this is...
Oh, someone that. Whoa! Oh, my God, he went there! Whoa! Guy in the back, whoa!
Yeah, that wasn't a clip of him at the Tonys. That was... just dropped it.
Whoa!
Cable. Sorry. So it's not an FCC violation, but it is still a Sunday morning.
Well,
I do wonder why you choose to go that way.
Let me say something.
Why do you choose to go that way?
We are at a moment in our lives, in this country, where this guy is like a gangster. He's come along and he's said things, done things we say over and over again. This is terrible. We're in a terrible situation.
He's like a gangster. Again, we're just picking up talking points now. I view Robert De Niro the same way I viewed him the other day, which is he's an actor who sometimes I like and sometimes I don't. I don't care for his political opinion at all. If he came out there and he was in support of President Trump, it would be somewhat newsworthy because generally speaking, when we're talking about Hollywood actors and actresses, they happen to be very, very, very progressive, and you're not supposed to be conservative if you work in Hollywood. And so that would be a little bit of a news position. I don't care what Patricia Heaton has to say about Donald Trump. Patricia Heaton is a very high-profile conservative. The fact of the matter is she's probably the most successful current actress or actor in Hollywood that is openly conservative. Still don't care what she has to say about anything. Although I will take that interview because I like her. She's in this new show on CBS. I don't normally like sitcoms, and I mildly like this one. Carolyn's Second Act or something? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I've seen commercials.
It's actually not that bad.
I
love her.
Good.
Patricia Heaton's awesome. And then when you find out she is a conservative, I will admit, part of me likes her even more.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I'd watch the show.
It's not great. But, it's not bad. 1-800-465-8770. It's Jason Rant Show.